You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
Hey, Chris here. You know, this one time when I was like, 20-ish? Not entirely sure anymore, so long ago. I went up, took the train to New York City, and it was one of those deals. You're just like, okay, well, I want to be in the city, but I need to get in a hotel room, and it's late at night, and I don't want to go bother the one member of my family who's there, because I'm too irresponsible to have called him to tell him I was there ahead of time. I'm like, okay, well, I guess I'm going to find a cheap hotel room, and that's exactly what I did. And it was one of those places right out of a Scorsese film from the 70s. This was the late 80s, for the record, but it hadn't changed all that much. And it reminded me a lot, watching this movie, Hotel Artemis, of kind of what it was like with, like, do I really want to sleep in this room? With, like, walls peeling, everything is, it looks like it's a century old. There's just a sense of danger to the whole place. But it looks like maybe there was a time once upon a time that this was really nice. Just that was a long time ago. It was super creepy. I guess it was good that was before the major bed bugs era, because I almost certainly would have gotten them from that hotel. But I'll save all the talking about Hotel Artemis for the actual review coming up. I'm just here, of course, to say thank you to the subscribers. You guys at subscribing at $2, $5, $10, and $25 level. Hell, one of you is even subscribing twice to the $25 level. You're so happy to support us. That's Machek, of course, who is amazing. But thank you. You guys, the only reason the site can keep going, and we've got more and more reasons, to, like little bonuses for you guys to keep you happy for your subscription, including, of course, this week's Breakfast Pub is going to be huge with all the trailers that are coming out, and we've got two upcoming Watch a Movie with Us for the Time Lord and Above subscribers that are both going to be really cool, one of which is either out today or tomorrow. We'll have to see how it goes. Also, of course, thanks to Oscar Blues Brewing Company. They made the first craft brew in the can, Dale's Pale Ale. Really delicious. One of my favorite beers. Anytime you see canned, like, craft beers, you know that's because these guys did it first. And their breweries are, they've got four of them, and they're always really cool. They're, the one in Austin way is huge. If you haven't visited it, you really should. So, yes, there's one in Austin. There's two in Colorado, and there's one in North Carolina. You guys should check them out. All their different beers. They have, like, a Pilsner, multiple types of IPAs. They have a coconut porter that I'm not normally even the biggest coconut guy. I think it's a texture thing, but this is so good. I had a sip of my wife's. So I was like, oh my God, this is delicious. Anyway, without any further ado, on to that review. You know, this movie, Hotel Artemis, I as somebody gets a lot of emails, and Frank, you probably know as well, and JC,
yeah.
I was getting all these emails with just the poster. No description, nothing about this movie, just like, here you go, aren't you guys excited, Hotel Artemis? And we're all like, what the fuck is Hotel Artemis?
I've been following it for about a year and a half, so I kind of was excited, especially since the dude wrote this to his debut, but he wrote Iron Man 3.
Yeah, which
revived Iron Man for me.
Unfairly maligned.
Yeah,
really
very
good
much
Iron
so.
Man
so I was like, yeah, Hotel Artemis, when's that date? All right.
I saw a trailer for this about 2 months ago. Just randomly it popped up while I was watching something on YouTube. But I thought, for about a second, I was thinking, is this like a new John Wick trailer?
What?
I thought this was in the John Wick universe.
Well, that was the thing. It feels like it almost could be.
I thought, yeah.
And you watch this trailer and you're like, holy shit, this is not what I was expecting at all. I went from like, this will probably be something they don't even screen, to like, holy shit, I really hope they screen this.
Yeah.
And with a cast like this.
I said to you last week, like, we haven't gotten an email for that yet. When's the screening? Yeah. I want to watch it.
And, of course, it was, like, exactly 20 minutes after the end of another screening on the entire other side of town. And so we're all, like, everybody, every critic in town was like, run to your car!
Run! Ass, yeah.
I'm actually the exact opposite. I hadn't even heard of this film until I was listening to The Breakfast Pub, shameless plug.
Yes. Only available to subscribers, but only $2 a month. Come on.
$2
a month.
Plug it.
And
plug
so
it.
I don't watch trailers. That's my thing. I don't watch trailers. I don't want to be a part of any of that because I like to be surprised.
Okay.
And so The Breakfast Pub, shameless plug, part two, is the way that I can still, like, get apprised of current trailer knowledge without actually having to watch them. So, Breakfast Club, a couple of weeks ago, you guys talked about Hotel Artemis, and I was like, this sounds like something I would want to watch. The way you guys described it, I was like, this sounds fucking amazing.
I thought it was the weirdest Hotel Transylvania spinoff ever.
Cut it off. We should have video because she did that thing with her face. She pursed her lips.
Yeah, I did my.
Are you pausing there, like just like to, so like, to save it for
I'm thinking Patience not a fan of this film, man.
I think I'm going to be the unpopular opinion.
Okay.
Oh God damn it, Patience! I thought this was going to be one of those movies we liked.
No, but there has to be one.
I always look forward to the movies that you and I like. It's so rare.
Yeah, I was like, we're back. No, I was like, there's no werewolves in this. You should love it.
But there is someone called the Wolf King.
That's true.
Yeah, I guess
that's
true.
That's true. Jeff Goldblum making a very all too small appearance in the
Oh my God.
But a great appearance.
But you know what? I said to you right when the credits were going, I was like, man, I wanted more time with these people. I feel like I barely got to know them. And that's a good case in point. I really wanted to spend more time with everybody in this movie.
Fortunately, we spent a lot of time with Jodie Foster and Sterling K. Brown, who I think are fantastic.
See, we're going to have different opinions about that as well.
Oh, okay. You didn't like Jodie Foster?
I know.
What is your problem with Jodie Foster?
I have no problem with Jodie Foster. I would marry her if it was an option. It's not.
It is so not an option. So not an option. 100% not. For a variety of reasons.
She's amazing. An amazing actress and performer. And I see what attracted her to this piece. Mm. That she really is kind of the centerpiece of this movie. And I think, sadly, because of the script, that's an issue.
Oh my god.
Patience is
like, Patience, oh my god, a friend.
Thank you so much.
Okay, well, let's get into the story.
So I do want to say this director, writer, Drew Pierce, this is actually, despite having written some other, co-written some other stuff like Iron Man 3, this is his directorial debut as a feature. The only other thing he directed was that apology to fans who were pissed off about. The Iron Man 3 Mandarin thing of going, oh wait, there actually is a real Mandarin out there.
But that Iron Man 3 is so good, you can actually overlook that Mandarin.
I love Iron Man 3. Yeah.
I do too.
It's my favorite.
Even Rebecca Hall is good.
Wow, this is a weird room. Sorry, a lot of people are like, I'm never in this room.
You're the other guy who likes Iron Man 3 too?
Yeah. As long as you're not the guy that likes Iron Man 2.
No.
Okay, good.
I admit there's part of me that's just kind of like, don't fuck with Shane Black.
Yeah.
Don't fuck with him. Yeah. I have his back. Anyway,
have a nice Christmas.
This particular film, first Jodie Foster appearance since Elysium.
Yeah.
2013.
Well, she said she'll only act if she's asked to do something she's never done before.
And this is definitely something she's never done before.
Yeah.
This is a very John Carpenter-esque from the 80s type movie. Which should right off the bat get like somewhere Brian Salisbury's like ears caught on
perking,
fire.
Yeah.
Low budget, high concept.
Yeah. She runs in the year 2028, I believe it is.
Yeah.
A place, a higher level of a building that is a super fortified hospital for criminals. That's its whole deal. It's not like, we're not talking about the night nurse here, right? We're talking about like somebody.
I love that reference.
No, thank you.
Yeah.
We're talking about somebody who like works for, like got this whole deal going through a big criminal to begin with, but is deeply and completely in charge of this place. Has a very specific set of rules for this place, including no fighting, no killing, no being rude to the staff.
No guns. I mean, no guns. Again, it's the John Wick universe. It's like, all criminals are welcome here. If you're a member of this club, you just have to follow the rules. And God forbid, if you break the rules, you are on everybody's shit list. Which is why it feels like, according to Drew Pierce, he came up with this concept before John Wick came out.
Sure.
But I'm pretty sure... John Wick is the reason this movie got greenlit.
Well, agreed. Even though this takes place in a much grungier universe than John Wick, which
it's not as pretty. Though.
It's not as pretty as
Like this is a grungy universe. John Wick is ridiculously like
glossy
in a fun sort of way. That universe that like that underworld is this sort of world of royalty. This is not that.
No, this has more like a noir stain.
Yeah.
Yeah. to it.
It's seedy LA during the middle of a riot.
Yes.
You know?
It
all starts in the middle of like this hospital that's here that regularly does what it does with her in charge, with the riots going on because a big corporation in LA has bought rights to water, which by the way is a thing that actually is
That's real life.
Yeah.
I mean, Flint, Michigan. Hello.
It's got some very some topical things.
Nestle. Hello.
But as cut
just
off,
reminding everybody,
they've cut off free water. They've said no more free water to anyone. You have to pay for it. And so there's the biggest riot in LA history. Which, by the way, big corporations, you're not listening. But if you were, that's exactly what's going to happen if you try that bullshit. And they're like, and she's like, whatever, this place was built to be impregnable. It's fine. They have multiple levels of security and all this stuff. She has Dave Bautista as her deeply loyal, like,
it's such a mother son dynamic, isn't it? You bit my.
And they only ever refer to each other as the order, as Everest, which is his code name, but he's the orderly, and he only ever refers to her as nurse. Yeah. I mean, the biggest crime in this movie is that this hospital is criminally understaffed.
Criminally?
There's only two of them.
That's
the biggest crime. I'm like, how do you... I understand, you know, it's not, like, open to the public. It's a
There's only, like, five rooms. Surely there's more criminals in L.A.
But apparently you have to be really, really, really rich to get in here.
But it doesn't even start with her. It starts with Sterling K. Brown, which, by the way, I said to Martin earlier tonight, because he and I are both, like, we're big, like... television watchers.
Are you This Is Us? Are you This Is
No,
Us?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
But I've seen him on so many different things over the years, and I'm like, why is he not like Denzel Washington huge?
He was one of the great actors. Wasn't he also Black Panther?
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
He was.
Plus second, I think. Yeah, like, he's Michael B. Jordan's dude.
He is so great. And in this movie, he is definitely, like, the, I think
he's the protagonist.
He is the MVP of this
film. Which, you know what? Yes. Ed said it really well.
Ed from Synapse.
Ed Travis.
Which is the other site that you...
Yeah, my editor. Ed Travis. Synapse. Plug. Synapse. Anyways, but he said, well, that, like, you know, nobody in this cast in this film is who you expect them to play.
Yeah.
Like, no one in this film has played a character they played before, essentially. You know, they may play it in a similar, you know, trait-wise, you know, characteristically, you know, acting-wise, in similar fashion. But no one's ever played anything they played before, which I think is really works to this film's benefit.
Which is the most interesting about Dave Bautista, because, like, his last name, obviously, he is a Latino, but, like, the way he's talking in this movie, I'm like, oh, yeah, he is a Latino. I forget that.
Yeah. But there's a little bit of ambiguousness, ambiguity about it as well.
Isn't that the first time we've ever seen Bautista play it where he actually was using a Latino accent?
I believe so. But, I mean, I actually disagree 100%. I thought that everyone was playing... I mean, the only... Okay, so... Jodie Foster was not playing Jodie Foster. Yeah. She was doing an amazing job. But Jeff Goldblum played Jeff Goldblum. Sure. Charlie Day played Charlie Day. Dave Bautista played Dave Bautista. Sure. The only other person I thought that, like, kind of did not do the norm was Zachary Quinto.
All right, so let me address what you just said. Like, I agree with you that Dave Bautista was largely playing a very Dave Bautista...
I mean, it was Drax.
...modern role. Yeah, but he was... my only point was he was doing it with Latino, which is true to
this is also true.
It's much closer to
And that is a different... That's a different, that's a different social...
Not everybody wants
it. Well, that's a different social experience, you know, playing a Latino in that, you know, time and place. That's a different social experience than... Drax would have.
Absolutely. And I thought
he
was
played for comedy.
And he's he's very
He does,
but he's very likable. Yeah. And that's the thing is, like, Bautista's got a huge amount of charisma, and I think he shows it well here. Jodie Foster is completely going, like, I'm wearing no makeup. In fact, if anything, she's wearing makeup to do the reverse.
Well, she's supposed to be in her 70s.
Does. Yeah, she's like, when we briefly, we did not stay around ourselves for the Q&A. I don't know if you did or not.
I did for, like, a few minutes. I wanted to hear her speak.
She shows up and you're just like, oh, wow, you look amazing in this Q&A.
She
and in the movie,
amazing. Yeah,
you're
she
ragged.
And, well, she said, I mean, I saw an interview with her before before this, and she said, "What's the preparation to get to the physical preparation?" She's like, "Oh, it's a fat pad, a gray wig, and makeup, old age makeup."
Yeah,
and that was the character.
Okay. I mean, but she has no vanity.
I was actually curious because the old age makeup. I didn't know that because I was like, is that what she looks like without makeup? I don't even know.
No. It was all these makeup.
But I was like, okay, so I'm impressed because it was that good.
I will also throw out something that she said in that interview, which will totally change the subject, but I'm curious to hear everybody else's take on this. She said the way she viewed Hotel Artemis is that everybody that populates Hotel Artemis, whether patient or staff, is essentially dead. They just don't know it. And I went into that film with that sort of mindset.
Well, there's a morbidity to it from the get-go based on, like, that feels clear because you're dealing with a film that's where everybody's a villain.
Like, everybody in it's a villain.
Well, everyone's gray. Everyone's
the
really
only
gray.
Character who's not at all is Jenny Slate, who is brought in as a character who, like, appears outside the facility that Jodie Foster sees on the cameras begging to be let in. Mm-hmm. They're very strict rules. In fact, implants that you have in your arms to be let in to the facility at all. And she's a cop. And Dave Bautista is like, what are you doing? We have rules. No cops, period. I mean, that's like the most basic of rules. And she's like, yeah, I got to break that for her. And so that's kind of that... One of the parts I liked the least of this film, the arc that I thought was unnecessary for Jodie Foster, but I don't want to go too deep into it. I know other people really liked it, but I was like, I feel like she would have been better as this sort of mysterious matron as she was as a person with
I wanted the same attention to pay to the other characters that was paid to Jodie Foster's character.
Yes.
I felt like it was so like lacking in the exposition and the backstory of everybody, but I wanted to get to know these people more and better.
I want to know more about Dave Bautista, who they hint at him being like, oh, he was just a kid when he hooked up with her, but we don't really know.
But you know, this is the same argument that people have leveled against, say, John Carpenter or even against Jim Cameron and Aliens. People are like, oh, all the soldiers are, you know, interchangeable. It's like, no. Have you seen those movies? Every one of those characters indelible.
No.
They just don't... They're not given a lot to do in terms of, like, dialogue or backstory. But you don't need a lot of backstory for a lot of these kids. Charlie Day is an obnoxious prick gun dealer. So, you know, you have the Sterling K. Brown.
Well, you realize you, that, Marco, though.
Okay. Hey, we don't talk about that on mic.
Oh, but
that
we do.
That could be used in
a download, Chris.
Sorry.
You want to download a gun.
But no, yes, you would. In this movie, you would. But no, like Sterling K. Brown has a little thing with, you know, his brother, who's always held him back. And that's why he's there, because his kid brother is dying and he needs Jodie Foster. And all the beds are taken
More of a criticism, less of a criticism, more of a wish, because I just like the characters. I just really like what was done. Yeah.
Well, see, normally I would agree with you guys on that, because in this sense, like Jenny Slate, who plays this cop character who gets let in, her whole identity, her whole storyline does not go anywhere. It kind of adds to Jodie Foster's character's storyline as far as, like, giving her more depth with why she's doing what she's doing. But, I mean, honestly, they didn't even need to have that character there at all.
They really didn't.
I mean, you could have taken her whole entire...
She was so extraneous.
Thank you, exactly.
You needed to see... You could have taken her whole entire
storyline out, and you would have not even have missed it.
She's not wrong, I
wouldn't have missed it because I would have never read the script and wouldn't know what's missing. So, yes, you're right. I wouldn't have missed it. Having it be there, I realized... Having it be there actually gave me a lot of insight into the Jodie Foster character.
No, I don't think you needed that.
The whole fact that she was agoraphobic and would had left that hotel for 22 years.
We already knew she was agoraphobic. Was a problem.
It doesn't matter if she's agoraphobic.
I get what he's saying.
But it does, according to
him. Needs to motivate her.
I get what he's saying.
Michael's here too, by the way.
We could have delivered the whole...
Who else would she have done that with? You?
I mean, there could have been other ways other than creating an entire character just for the sake of making Jodie Foster's character more developed.
I mean, it's also
I love that we're saying Jodie Foster's character.
Yeah, this particular genre.
Nurse.
it's common to this genre, though, where you have the cop come in. It's like Reservoir Dogs. Where it's like, everybody realizes.
This was no Reservoir Dogs.
Did I say that? I didn't say that. I'm just saying the fact that on
this
top of all the other
into
shit.
This film feud.
On top of all the other shit.
This is the View, one of us, net.net edition.
It's got to be all of these people who you should not be in a room together. And once they're in a room, that sets this powder keg alight. A cop is one of those elements.
So Michael's here, too.
Sorry, yeah. The thing is, I agree with Patience and Chris 100% about Jenny Slate's characters, because all of the things that she tells you about Jodie Foster's character is told to you anyways through other different characters.
Well, through her own, like, memories.
Yeah, she has, like, a lot of flashbacks that basically tell you what you need to know. Her whole, like, you know, not wanting to leave outside.
Her drinking?
Just as easily could pay off with the way the movie ends kind of thing. Like, there's a lot of stuff that just pays off that in ways that didn't, that Jenny Slate wasn't needed for, like, in any way. Like, she appears and then she disappears and then it's just, that's the end of it. And, like, there's just no point to it.
I think it also establishes the loyalty that Everest has to her, because he's a rule follower. And then this happens and he's like, I'm going to cover for you. And you realize how much those characters care about each other. She is, don't get me wrong, the Jenny Slate is an underwritten, functional character. And in like a lot of genre movies, that character serves a specific function. They achieve that function. And that is why the movie is as tight as it is. Otherwise, it would have been 2 hours long if I had to hear about Jenny Slate's
entire
backstory.
See, honestly, I feel like Jenny Slate was 12 minutes I can never get back. And it's like, not important at all.
It comes down to the point, like, I feel like this movie would have been better served by Jodie Foster being a character who was kind of this outsider who was not really she would have been better as a character.
Well,
about her background.
I think it would have boiled down to either creating a throwaway character like Jenny Slate was, or having another character ask Jodie Foster a lot of questions.
I mean, like, this movie would have been, like, I felt like it also at points faltered because it should have been funnier at points.
Really? I think the humor was really
It was funny, but I mean, I didn't think jokes fell flat, but I thought it wasn't as much as it should have been. I thought it should have been more constantly funny.
You see, I think its timing was really great.
It was, but there wasn't enough of it. And I thought part of the problem with that is they kept coming back to pathos in a way that a story like this, which is a total B-film story. I'm not saying this is a B-film.
No, I know what you mean.
But it's a riff on a classic B-film type scenario. Really calls for more humor than was here, or more action, which I want to point out, ultimately, there's not really a lot of action.
Well, at the finale. It adds up to the finale.
The whole film is about amping up towards there actually being action, when it happens, it's okay.
I feel like the trailer sold a different film than what we got as well, because the trailer sells the idea that Jeff Goldblum's going to be like, assaulting this place.
His people are going to be taking over, right?
Yeah, there's nothing anything
he's
like that.
He's only there to contribute to the Jodie Foster
plot. Like, he already owns the place, which is why the trailer makes even less sense.
I kept going, why is everything about the Jodie Foster plotline? I'm like, it's the least interesting storyline. I want to know more about Sterling K. Brown's plotline.
I want to know about
we haven't even mentioned Sophia Boutella, who's another person who's in here who has a previous relationship
with
Sterling K. Brown in here, and that's an interesting storyline that's going on.
But, I think it goes back to the whole, like, noir sort of thing that he was going for, in a way that he wanted people purposely to be mysteries and to be just figures. I mean, people have, like, characters are identified by their room names, like Acapulco or Hawaii, know. Even Jodie Foster's called the nurse more than she's actually called her real name, which is whatever,
Mrs.
Jean Thomas. So,
and the only time we ever know that is when the Jenny Slate character comes out. And that's the big reveal, because even the Batista character, he doesn't know her real name. Nobody knows their real names until this one person from her past shows up. Mm. And
which
that's what pulls
so
her out of that.
Though.
Can I say, I know that as much as people were saying, you guys were saying that like Charlie Day is playing a very Charlie Day role, I thought he knocked it out of the
Me too. I hate Charlie Day. I can't stand Charlie Day. I liked him in this. I really did.
He's a total scumbag villain.
Yes. And so much fun.
And he's, they did the right thing of going like, he's funny, but not in a sympathetic funny way, which is what they always do with Charlie. Like, he's a scumbag, but he's a sympathetic scumbag.
But he's a dumb scumbag.
Yeah.
He's also not the true antagonist.
But still is given some of the most funny lines in the film. I'm like,
he's the comic relief character, but he's also an antagonist who everybody knows is not the real threat. Yeah. He's never, no one in the movie feels threatened by him.
But you said the whole movie leads up to Jeff Goldblum as the Wolf King.
Yeah.
And then all of that feels like a wah, wah.
Oh, my God. I'm so glad you said that.
It's an extended cameo. And I enjoyed it. I wanted more. But I wanted more.
Disappointing.
But hey, JC, you're here, too.
Yeah. Hey, JC, tell us why it was such a breath of fresh air for Jeff Goldblum.
Tell me why you hated that.
I know. Normally, when you're this quiet, it's because you're like, you guys are all fucking crazy.
No, I kind of agree with your point in that a lot of it was just felt underused, and Goldblum's is like that. And I feel like even Jodie Foster's character, as soon as it's mentioned that he's the Wolf King and he's on his way, she's like, that's a stupid nickname.
I would take it, though. Yeah. If someone wanted to start calling me the Wolf King, I'd be like,
we're not going to start calling you the Wolf King.
No, we're not.
You know what?
You're Chris. You're going to stay Chris.
Yeah, sorry.
I'm the Wolf King.
Can I call you the Frog King?
No one. You're the only one that's going to call you the Wolf King.
He's the Wolf King, but his M.O. is drowning people.
Yeah, that's right.
No, not mine, to be clear.
Yeah, not Chris. Jeff Goldblum.
It's like, holy shit, if we don't work out for Chris, he's going to start drowning us because the ocean gives back. Go ahead,
no,
Jason.
It's good. No, I don't want to get blamed for the shit Patience does.
What?
So.
No. Sorry, go ahead. You're not supposed to talk about
that. Also, that's a long drive from here to get
you
to the ocean.
You already outed my secret identity as an arms dealer, Chris.
JC, please continue.
Hey, what's up?
A lot of it was short. I felt shortchanged, especially Sophia Boutella's character, who definitely needs to speak more French in future movies.
Is she even French?
I think she is.
I believe she is.
Well, let's find out.
She's like definitively like the new badass European chick.
She was in the army, and she's really good at it.
I would argue she is the only person in this whole film that gets a really badass action scene.
Yeah.
She really does.
You're totally correct.
Yeah. Bautista's edited the shit.
You don't even see anything on screen.
Yeah, let's see a director's cut of this movie.
And Zachary Quinto, who's like playing the son of the Wolf King, who's just like an afterthought in the plot.
I think he's an actor that relies on his voice. He's got one of the best jokes, though. He relies on his voice a lot to play menacing, really.
I actually like Zachary Quinto's character. That's one of the things I actually liked about this movie, because I like him as Spock, just so you know. As the new Spock. Oh, I'm getting
Some tongues are being bitten right now.
I love him as Spock.
And then I also liked him in American Horror Story Asylum.
Oh my god, which was one of my favorite seasons of American Horror Story. I feel so close to Patience right now because no one else likes that series. That season. And that one good season of Heroes.
I didn't watch that because I'm not a nerd.
And
Skylar.
Oh, no.
It's fine you didn't watch Heroes.
But I actually thought that Zachary Quinto went outside the box in this movie. I thought that he was one. Him and Jodie Foster's characters were the only two that I was like, oh, they're not playing
themselves.
They're past roles, basically.
He was actually so different from when he first started talking. And it was just the close-up of his mouth. I was like, oh, it's cool. Eli Roth is in this movie.
Oh, my God. That's hilarious.
Well, guys, let's go to final thoughts. Which one has the hairier chest? Let's go to final thoughts. Start with Michael going backwards this time.
So the thing about this film is that I did see a trailer before I watched this, and it sold a different film. But what I ended up seeing, I actually didn't mind what it was. Like, there's a lot of characters that
I feel are wasted here and there. Charlie Day's funny. Sterling K. Brown's great. His brother, I feel like they didn't have a lot of him in it as much as I would expect.
He's mostly dying for most of
the movie. Yeah, he's mostly just dying and taking a break.
He's not given a lot to do, but he's a really talented actor.
I mean, not that everybody...
What show is he on?
Not that everybody in here isn't a cliche, but he's, like, one of the most cliche.
He's cliche as hell. I thought Zachary Quinto was a lot of fun, though. Like, he's an over-the-top crazy person that I enjoyed when he would appear. Jeff Goldblum is great as always, but he doesn't do a lot. Like, the entire movie spends it saying, hey, we're terrified of this guy, and he just sort of shows up and then just sort of hangs out sort of thing. Like, everyone, like, he's like, even Sterling K. Brown's like, he's gonna murder the shit out of us. He's just like, I didn't even know any of this was happening kind of thing. Like, there's just so much that happens in this film that just, like, there's a lot of good surprises, though, especially with Jodie Foster's character. I liked seeing some of her backstory, and the reveal with her relationship with Jeff Goldblum's character, I thought was perfectly fine. But overall, I just thought, like, I was expecting much more from this film. Like, there's not a lot of action. There's not a lot of, like, the jokes are far and few in between. And overall, I don't know. Like, I personally like the world, the outside world, like, because the fact that, you know, like, there's, like, a helicopter Uber that Charlie Day tries using at one point. And there's, like, it's everything's futuristic, but enough slightly to where you don't feel like it's insane kind of thing. Like, it all seems plausible.
I mean, the medical tech is only 10 years in the future.
Yeah.
The medical tech's a little far-fetched. But not like Star Trek.
I can't wait for nanites.
There's a lot of, like,
how are the nanites?
I play a lot of Metal Gear Solid, so nanites. So I was like, fuck it, nanites. I'll go with it.
I mean, believe it or not, the part of it where it's like,
get them at CVS in a few years.
The part of, like, doing a biopsy on an organ and then printing out an organ is actually a thing that's pretty much happening right now.
Yeah, they're working on that right
now.
It's
like, okay, that's not too far-fetched, but the whole, like, some of the stuff on there was like, okay, the nanites thing is, like, more like 50 years. But
absolutely.
Okay.
But I did appreciate the fact that they used the 3D printer to make a gun, which is in the trailer as well.
Okay. Yeah, it is.
Which is why it sold a different movie.
It could only generate tissue, so I was hoping for, like, some weird Cronenbergian flesh gun. It's just a plastic.
At the same time, they didn't.
I remember that being a thing with 3D printing.
And you have to insert it into your stomach.
Yeah.
Yeah, the funny thing is, they kind of just forget that the guns exist at a certain point, though.
A Solo, a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, killed Cthulhu, so there's no more of that.
I was out of town for that, but I was out of town for Solo, but I would love to have sat down on this review.
It was
just
fun.
Anyway, if
you finish your Great American Novel review, then go ahead.
TED Talks.
I'm trying to, but you guys keep saying things.
Sorry.
I was just going to say my last thing is just that overall, like, I thought it was fine. It's nothing to write home about, but I don't regret seeing it, personally. I would have to give it 7 out of 10 Charlie Day... cursing. I wanted to say Wolf Polo, but I didn't know if anybody would get that.
That doesn't feel like that was English.
No. I'll change it. 7 out of 10 nanites.
Okay, that's way better.
Frankie baby.
You know, this movie is the reason... This movie is an example that the reason I do not write off the summer movie season in current years. It's something that's... familiar, but still fresh. I mean, it takes my favorite part of John Wick. It takes Assault on Precinct 13, The Purge. You know, just and
the
creates
mythology.
Yeah, but it has its own flavor and its own tone and its own, you know, sensibilities, and really runs with it. I really do think. I mean, I said it before. I want to see the director's cut of this movie. I want to see what his original vision was. And see it, you know, expand it. I want to spend more time with all these characters. Maybe not Jenny Slate, because I do think that she was sort of a throwaway character. She was just used to explain... She was essentially what they call a walker. You know, just used to explain somebody else. But
someone Andrew Lincoln shot in the head?
Exactly. Yeah, there you go. Yeah. But... I mean,
Walking Dead reference.
No, I mean, we know.
There's so much to love about this. I love the two eras. I love that this is sort of like it is a love letter to, like, old school 40s Hollywood. in a sense. That's sort of the mentality that Jodie Foster's character is living in. But I love that it's sort of like the future, a very, very real futuristic Los Angeles where, you know, could very well be headed. At the same time, I love that all of the women in this movie are playing essentially male roles. Like, Jodie Foster's called the nurse. She's a surgeon. She's a doctor. You know, she's the one that fixes people up. She really is.
There's a lot of female doctors, just so you know, Frank.
I know, but not in this world.
No, we're saying she's called the nurse.
She's called the nurse.
And that, like, the fact that nobody calls her the doctor. I get what you're saying, but that being said, all the actual surgery is done by, like, futuristic, like...
Well, people go to her to save their lives.
Yeah.
You know, essentially. And, you know, I love that. I mean, there's just... I think I'll have a lot more to say about this film after my fifth viewing, and there probably will be a fifth viewing. Because I love it that much. I really do.
Are you serious?
I really do. I love the melting pot of this movie.
Well, do you, in that vein, because this also kind of makes me think of like Smoking Aces. Have you seen Smoking Aces?
Oh God, here we go.
I love Smoking Aces, and I love it for that reason too.
I knew this was going to happen.
Yeah, like this.
I turned to Martin before this even started. I went, you know what?
JC's going to talk about Smoking Aces.
No. I said, even if this totally sucks, you know, if Cargill had been here, he would have loved it. And we both laughed. It's like, yeah, he's like, oh, Joe Carnahan's. You know, I'm sorry.
Sorry, no, it's okay.
It's an old school reference. Like, oh, fuck. All listen, right,
so great.
I love Smoking Aces. I own it. I've seen it more than a few times.
I saw it in theaters.
I did too. And I'm the same as with this movie. This pulled me into its own special world, and I want to stay there. I want to, you know, explore it. I'm going to give it 8 out of 10.
Wow.
Yeah, 8 out of 10. Yeah,
Jesus,
I know, right?
I think he was just rebounding from Ocean's 8, to be honest.
Seriously.
It's maybe about 30% of that. I'll give you that. 30% of that.
30% Ocean's 8 and 30% drinking.
No, 30% and, you know, just Ocean's 8. Yeah. which necessitated the drinking on some level.
We still love. Okay.
Still
respect you, Frank.
Thank you. 8 out of 10.
Wow.
Yeah. Just Jodie Foster kicking ass like she always does, in acting-wise. Because no one does emotion like Jodie Foster, really.
Well, let's go to J.C. DeLeon, who always has something interesting to say. And usually an opinion that, like, takes us aback. But in this case, I feel like you're going to, hit the middle line?
Probably more middle of the road. Like Michael, I felt like the trailer sold a different movie. And any time that happens, I'm... more often than not, a little disappointed in the outcome. But that also usually means I'll give the movie a second chance. And so this has a lot of elements of movies that I do like. I do like that almost every character is given really cool moments and moments to shine. I do also feel like Jenny Slate was...
A throwaway.
You could have sacrificed her character and just built out that storyline with more Jeff Goldblum, and that would have been better. So yeah, I think there's a lot here to like. It's just not quite enough of the potential it has, and so in that sense, I think it underperforms just a little bit. But I think it's still a really cool movie. I think it's something a lot of people could dig. And so I definitely wouldn't fault him for it. I would give this 6 out of 10 caged up guns.
What about you, Marco?
Well, I'm leaning with Frank on this one because I happen to really like this movie.
Mm.
Is it perfect? Of course not. Mm-mm. What it is a fun little B movie with a little bit of noir, a lot of pulp, little bits of Blade Runner, and some social commentary thrown in. It's a little bit of John Carpenter mixed in with some more modern stuff. And yes, it's derivative, but it's not shy about what its influences are. I don't think we've talked about the production design, which I thought was beautiful on
this
film.
It's gorgeous, yeah.
I love this idea of an Art Deco hotel from like the 30s with all of these little sci-fi accoutrements. I thought that the characters were, for the large part, very... pulpy, very easily recognizable types, but each of the actors gives all of those characters just enough of a spin to elevate them a little bit. And we have just enough information to know who the characters are without having to go, like, everybody needing a big, long, drawn-out backstory. I think it's a fun movie. I think it's a good little B-flick. I thought if this came out when I was a kid and it just was on VHS, I'd love the hell out of this movie. It's not a huge action movie. It's not a film noir movie. It's not a sci-fi movie. It's an interesting blend of all of those things with a little bit of world-building built attached to it. I think this is a great little flick. You know, it's I'm happy to see little flicks like this because films like this probably shouldn't exist, and yet they do. And hopefully, Drew Pierce will get to work again on a bigger canvas. Hopefully, with Jodie Foster, because anybody who can bring Jodie Foster out of semi-retirement is all right in my book. I give this movie 8 out of 10 shots to the neck with little baby elephant tranquilizers.
I love you, Marco. Did I tell you that? I love you.
I love the way the balance has been going with the back and forth here, so we're going to go to the exact opposite of what Marco just said. And,
I love patience, too, though. I love patience.
I'm smiling right now. I'm going to align more closely with Michael and JC. I just didn't think that this movie delivered quite what I wanted it to deliver. And I didn't really go into it with any expectations. I knew who the people were going to be. I was excited because I'm thinking Jodie Foster, Jeff Goldblum, Zachary Quinto, even Charlie Day and Dave Bautista. And I go into it knowing that it's going to be a solid cast, that it's going to be an amazing lineup, and they delivered. Don't get me wrong. Every single actor in this film was fantastic. Even Dave Bautista being Dave Bautista, even Charlie Day being Charlie Day. I really, even Jeff Goldblum being Jeff Goldblum. I love them for how brief they are in this movie.
Jeff Goldblum
is
especially cool in this movie.
He was
slick,
amazing. And I just feel like that whole build up to the Wolf King was just so disappointing in the end. I also think that there was some unnecessary plot, like Jenny Slate was not even necessary to the plot whatsoever. Like, we get it, Jodie Foster is suffering a loss and has agoraphobia. Like,
somebody could have asked her about that.
Yeah, I mean, we could have cut 12 minutes out of the movie, 12 minutes of our lives, and it would have been a way better film, I think. It just needed to be tightened up a bit. Honestly, the first two acts, I was bored to tears.
Wow.
I was so, and I mean, they were setting up
suddenly
the background.
I'm separating.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. But I was so bored the first two, like, acts of the movie. I was just like, when are we going to see some action? Because you walk into this kind of movie and you want to see some action. And you just get, like, bits and pieces, and then you're just, like, bored.
There's an abridged feel to this movie.
There really is. Yeah. And I agree with you that I think that the director's cut, I want to see that. And I will watch this movie again if I get a fully fleshed out director's cut.
I guarantee you all the action scenes got in the final cut. If anything got cut, it was like the dramatic
dialogue. I mean, even the dialogue wasn't super great. I just feel like this wasn't a film trying to pretend to be another film. And, I mean, I just wanted more. In the world of John Wick's The Continental, in the world of, you know, any of these other action films that we are getting just these amazing sequences, even... I mean, what were we discussing earlier? Like, you know, Lucky Number 11.
Love that movie. Always pimp out that movie. Always pimp out that movie.
Like, there's so many better movies that want to be like this. And
I know. I hate all those 40s noirs because there's just not enough gunfights and kung fu in them.
Stop being bitter.
Okay.
Don't be bitter.
Okay, come on. We had, the last 3 minutes of the movie was actually action-packed.
What's your review?
I give it a 6.5 custodian badges.
That was actually more generous of you than I thought.
Yeah, me too, actually.
I vacillated to this film, I feel like I'm watching a rough cut of an amazing film. I kept going, this is so close to being a phenomenal film.
but it's so unbalanced. There's so many things that are mistakes. I mean, even in the, like, going back to the script stages, for sure, but still, it's like, oh, there are things you could fix it so easily. I get it. This felt like there was interference, producer interference here. Maybe there wasn't.
But it's not a major studio. It's the same time.
But that doesn't always matter.
I mean, they said they shot... I mean, he said at the Q&A, he said they shot it in 33 days.
Okay. Wow. That explains a lot.
Doesn't mean... doesn't say how long they wrote it in, though.
Yeah. He said he was shot in 33 days. Yeah.
But I watch it, and I'm like, there's so much great potential here. A lot of it never really pays off. But I never stopped having fun watching this film.
Yes.
I had a great time with this movie, regardless of all its flaws. I had to keep reminding myself, though, of all the movies that are deeply flawed movies like this one, which is deeply flawed, that I loved to death because I saw when I was 16. Mm. And this feels like one of those movies. I guarantee you, when my ex-partner Brian Salisbury from Junk Food Junkfoodcinema.com, when he sees this, he's going to fall madly in love with this fucking movie. He's going to not shut up about it. Because this is his type of movie. I know a lot of people who this is their type of movie are going to be like, no, absolutely, all forgiven. Here. I love it. And this is a movie I would highly recommend it. Everyone who loves those types, if the words John Carpenter mean something to you, like you go, and the dopamine fires in your brain, this is a movie you're going to want to see. It really is. It's fun.
I love patience making her face right
now. Because I'm just thinking, if you love The Raid, you're going to hate this movie. If you love John Wick, you're going to hate this movie.
John Carpenter, who's made better movies than all those guys.
Then you're going to hate this movie because John Carpenter is amazing.
I don't really think John Carpenter has necessarily made a better movie than The Raid, I'm just saying.
But, well, oh my god, there's so many arguments that we had here. Oh my god.
John Carpenter's made some great fucking movies. I'm not saying that. No, but to say that, like, no, The Raid sucked compared to everything John Carpenter did is like a.
John Carpenter makes damn good John Carpenter movies.
So what's your rating, by the way?
You're going to hate this movie.
No, you're right. I just feel like there's a lot of stuff that was unsaid here. It's like, this is a film that makes me confused watching it in terms of trying to come down to a review. Because I'm like, I did really enjoy watching this, but I was hyper aware of all the ways in that it failed. Oh God!
I think
this is
really hard for you know. I mean, if we weren't critics, we would think this is the best movie we've seen all year.
Be like,
I think if
I wasn't a critic, I'd be stronger recommending it to other people than I am now, and going like, okay, I'm trying to appeal to a wider audience of people who are listening to me and going. It's okay.
Well, we'd be so conscious of everything of all its influences.
What's your final rating?
I give it 7 out of 10 times patience grimaced at this
point. I feel like we're all on the same page here, but I do want to give a shout out. Jodie Foster was really great in this movie.
She's Jodie Foster.
But no, I disagree. I thought she played somebody different.
She did. I mean, listen, A couple of years ago, Ron Howard asked her to play a stroke victim, and she turned that down, and that movie still hasn't gotten made. So the fact that she said yes to this shows how...
She's getting offers, so she's picky.
Yeah.
And also, Zachary Quinto is definitely outside the box, and he was the only other person that I thought didn't play... A usual Zachary.
Well, see, I thought that about Charlie Day too, because I don't like Charlie Day.
I never liked Charlie Day, but he always plays the same role.
He was just smarmy Charlie Day.
And even Jeff Goldblum is not playing the same Jeff Goldblum.
I'm not saying that it wasn't perfect.
He was finally perfect.
He was just Dennis from It's Always Sunny.
So what's the rating on Jeff Goldblum-y level? I give it a 3 out of 10, Jeff Goldblum.
If you want, it's Jeff Goldblum,
the actor who died somewhere in the early to late 90s. Somewhere around the time Jeff Goldblum started going, you know, this Christopher Walken guy, he's not going to live forever. There's a niche there. And, you know, I pause a lot.
Holy shit, are we still recording?
You know, I think I could do that. You know, I'm just saying, somebody's got to do it. Why not me?
I carried this uncomfortable hunk of a movie up my ass.
If there's anybody who has never experienced
the actor, if anybody wants to
experience the essence of Jeff Goldblum, buy the Into the Night Blu-ray where he does a present-day interview, and it is the most far-out, spacey thing you'll ever watch.
Great movie, though.
It's a good movie. I'm talking about the retrospective interview.
Oh, sure.
Where he's him. It's the most sci-fi thing you'll ever watch.
That's your thing so far.
Yeah. Sorry. Anyway,
this isn't the Gathering.
I'm always looking for the way to close it out with somebody saying something funny.
Jodie Foster's back. There you go.
It's not a Gathering.
Oh, okay.
The Gathering. Oh. Available for brown coat and above subscribers on oneofus.net.
I'm just going to go shoot Ronald Reagan now.
Oh, my God. This Oscar.
What? That's a deep Jodie Foster
reference. This Oscar blues is so delicious.
We blame the Oscar blues for this conversation.